帰るかな。Maybe I ought to do something different.
Is that working, Dave, or is it still acting like it did last night?
This is a different one.
Oh, and I need the other one.
Yeah, we need to double check. I'm not sure I got first hour last night. It ran, but then I had it standing up, and I knocked it over, and when I picked it up, there was no, it was like this. So I hope that it got it. I've been trying to help get the the way to do it. Okay, I'll put this out here.
Turn them both on. Which one works now?
Well, this is the one works. I know, and the one I think the other one does. But they were getting an awful lot of paper noise when it was laying down. So hopefully this is better. Father, we're grateful tonight for the evening, the privilege we have of opening the book, of being together, having that ongoing relationship to your Holy Spirit, so that we're put in an environment where he has that opportunity to teach us. And we trust you've been teaching us things as we've gone through the day, and that this is a high point in the day of learning those things about you. Well, thank you in Christ's name. Amen. We're world system related, and we're in page 88, according to my connote. And did we go to 89? We are on 89. I say I use red pens so I can see them better. I use them for proofing all the time. Yeah, it's bottom of 89. I thought when I looked at it tonight, I said,
nah. I remember now.
Yeah. So now we're moving down to the human commerce side of things. And commercial items. And so we'll go to Genesis again to establish some background. And when we see those beginnings of the world system, when did the world system start? Okay. Probably 50-51, or your core. And so it was with the slaying of Cain. And from Luke, we learned that Cain was a prophet. We don't know that Abel was a prophet. We don't know from the Old Testament that he was. Yeah, whoa. Yeah, the wrong guy died on it. I think that's happened before. Okay. So in chapter 4, what we've done, you have the beginning of 4 is where we have the murder of Cain. Of Abel. I'm going to do that all night tonight. I'll get away from him. I'm leaving in that matter. 4:20 says, and Ada bare Jabal. He, emphatic, was. Some of these pronouns are, an emphatic in Hebrew is really emphatic because you already have the he in the verb. And so they put an extra pronoun out in front to pound the table or whatever to make sure. It shows you something of the importance of some of these individuals by the emphatic pronoun. And he was the father of all such as are dwellers in tents and of such as have cattle. So you have him involved in what kind of a society? Basically an agrarian or agricultural society. He lives in tents. Why would he live in tents? Because we have a little problem called the curse on the ground. And so if you raise cattle, in order to maintain the herds that you need for commerce and for your family, you had to be nomadic. And that was one thing that I had really hoped to see in Israel were the Bedouins out in the desert. And it was kind of interesting. I saw a lot of Bedouins, but they weren't out. Well, they were in the desert, but they weren't. Because what they did, they set up shanty villages in the desert, sort of. You know, you might see, it looked like Tijuana when it was busy, just over the line. Tijuana, Mexico, there was a river that was right on the border, and on the Mexican side of the river were all of these cardboard, any kind of shanties. And if you went in, it's not that way today, because they had a big flood, and it wiped them out at one point, and then today they're not going to sell anything, because Tijuana is almost a ghost town. Compliments of the drug cartels. And you go across the border, lots of times you'd see these Mexican women coming with, you know, handcrafted flowers and all of this kind of thing. And that's the way the Bedouins were. They were just shacks, whatever they could find. And it was really interesting. I wanted to get a picture of one where they had a tank that was a trailer. I mean, a big round water, looked like a gas truck tank, only it was about half the size of a normal gas truck. And here was this Bedouin woman in her Arab dress, of course, and she was out there with a container getting water. And the bus is going too fast. But it was really interesting. I mean, they went where they could get water, but they weren't wandering all over the hills like they used to. Part of it was too civilized, and it was interesting. You'd see them, they'd have a car pickup at their place, and said, well, and they had camels, too. It was interesting. You'd see on the horizon, you'd see these weird creatures up there. So they were doing that. I think they use that for tourist trade. But anyway, he's a Bedouin. He's a wanderer. It's necessary because of the curse. I think so many people do not think in terms of that curse on the ground. We looked at it with the Noah situation and with chapter 5 and the situation where, Noah was born and so he was happy because of the curse of the ground. He'd have somebody to work. Papa would. And I think he'd hope that there would be enough extra labor so that there would be more food. Not just another mouth to feed, but there would be more ability to do that. And so this is primitive commerce. It's not Babel commerce in that sense. It's not what happened when we get to the Tower of Babel. You have a city, but...
No, you're saying that there's... I'm getting the idea from this. You're saying that there was no agriculture because this was the line of Cain, and his descendants picked up the curse also.
No. Well, the ground was cursed, and it goes all the way. You've got the ground completely cursed up through, up to Noah. You have that interval. And again, that takes us right back to that verse in chapter 5, where verse 29. So he called his name Noah, saying, "This same shall comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands, because of the ground which Jehovah has cursed." And so that verse helps us know that it was going on. Now we get back to the end of the flood, and I won't say the curse was lifted. But there was it seems that it was partially lifted at the end of the flood. They were at least able to grow some, a little bit better in that matter. And example is verse 3 of 9. Every moving thing that liveth shall eat be food for you, even the green herb that I've given. Have I given you all things? There seems like there's an opportunity to have vegetation, have a little bit more of a veggie diet in that matter. And so there's a little kind of a hint that he probably lightened up on the curse. You can imagine how frustrated Cain must have been. I mean, those watermelons he used to grow. Whatever was in his head, he'd plant it, it would just be awesome. Then he goes and he tries to plant a garden like he used to, and he couldn't get any to grow. It was like Oregon, I hope isn't this year. Like Oregon last year. I felt like I was an abject failure with my garden. I mean, I grow a garden so I can have tomatoes. I didn't have enough tomatoes to do anything to speak of. I think I probably had about maybe a dozen and hardly any cherry tomatoes, which are, you know, that's weird. So, I don't know what...
Is that bad for everybody last year, or did you just have a bad year?
A lot of people did, yeah. Even out in Cherry Grove and some other places. Dale and I were talking to somebody, and they were going out big tomatoes down by Gaston, and I thought, how in the world the guy... Then I find out most of them were in greenhouses. So, you know, that would work.
Yeah.
So, I used to have piles of them. But, anyway, when you're in an agricultural society, you do what you can on it. It was, I mean, it's interesting. Today we are so spoiled. I was thinking, we played a game years ago, and it was a game that with pictures and objects, and there were titles on artwork, and so you had a list of titles. Like one of them was Tax on Tea, and it was a title. I think there was an actual, you know, thing about the revolution. Well, there was a card with a letter, big letter T with a tack on it, or two tacks or three tacks glued on it. So those were the kinds of things. But one of them had a picture of tomatoes. And it matched up with a title which was Deer in the Winter. And that doesn't work today. And I hate those hothouse tomatoes. But that's commercial on it. And those 99-cent strawberries at Winkle, I picked up a couple of those. I picked up three of them. I didn't realize what was going on, so I ended up with three. And one the day I picked up one, it was from Mexico. The other two were from California. And it was kind of interesting. I thought about that. Then I had to do the taste test on it. And none of them were very great. You know? Those from Mexico had been around a little bit longer, so they were a little more ripe. Okay, anyway. Commerce. And we're living in a society where people really don't understand the issues of commerce. We just don't. I mean, how many people have potato sellers? You know, and there used to be, you know, that was the livelihood. I remember as kids, we had it wasn't a separate cellar, but down in our cellar, there was a section like we'd have straw and dirt, and we'd have mixed in there carrots and potatoes and whatever that we didn't like. You know, any root crop that would last. And there was always apples stuck off in a corner. They weren't, they didn't need to cover them. And that was how you got through a winter, by doing that. And so the gardens went into the, well, it was a root cellar, is what they call them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so it's hard for us to teach this to people that can go to the grocery store and get 10 pounds of potatoes on sale for 78 cents. You know, it's just really hard to understand that. Well, this is I call it primitive, and it's, you know, it's really, really primitive compared to what we have. I can't believe that they can fly produce today for what they do. I mean, look at if you want flowers, where are your flowers coming from? South America. And they're flying in by the plane load. And they can afford to do that because of the labor. And a lot of them are coming from Chile, which is interesting. Anyway, we don't care. So what we have is this human commerce and everything that happens. 417, we had the building of a city. It says, Cain knew his wife. She conceived, bore a son, Hanok, and he builded a city and called the name of the city after his son Hanok. And this is not the Enoch that we're used to in the next chapter. Different one. But he has this guy, but he builds a city. That was an absolute violation of what God told him he was going to do. He's going to be a vagabond. He's going to be a wanderer. And so he builds a city. City involves commerce. City involves government. City involves the need to make work. And that's, I mean, it's so interesting that people that are, if that's what's been interesting in our country, a lot of people know how to make, I mean, learn to make work. They would provide a service or a product, and they could make a living off of it. And people made a living off of a lot of interesting things for years. And you think some of these people, like in the antique business, you know, the old antique business off the, on, you know, on Main Street and storefront, and you say, how in the world do they make money? You don't see people going in. Then you have the highfalutin ones where you know they make money. But people will do that for years and years and years in that way, and people are able to do that. But the city is a place where that works. But you have to find a way to feed your family and yourself. And so I have no idea what Cain imagined he could do. Maybe he just liked all the grandkids around. I don't know in that matter. But he makes his city. And remember, he calls the land Nod in verse 16. You know, he dwells in the land of Nod. And I think he named it. I don't think that God named it. Because God used that exact same word, only in a verb form. And when he says he's going to be a fugitive and a vagabond in 12. And Nod is the word translated vagabond in the AV. So that's, I mean, just interesting. He's going to wander around. Okay, so he makes this city. This society becomes a mobile society, in a sense, where you take your cattle where they go, and they're moving around. You're going where food is for the cattle and where product can be sold. And so it involves competition. I won't call it capitalism. It was pretty primitive in that matter. And so they were able to feed their family. In chapter 5 and verse 29, and we read that verse already about Noah and that circumstance. There was an expansion. Why? How much more food could another body, a strong body, make? In chapter 6, there was a lot more food. That's, I mean, really, chapter 6 is part of it is commerce. Mankind was polluted in his ways because he wanted more stuff. Most of it was food. And so you have these Nephilim, these monster men, that are able to work in the farm, and they can turn soil over quickly. And you can well imagine that they could probably do it at least two or three times faster than a normal man. And so if they could do that, and they're big enough, so they could haul water if they had to haul water. And if they had to dig a well, they probably could do that pretty quick. So you start thinking in these terms of how the world system really needed to be annihilated with the flood. Because as commerce got kind of, and industry got out of hand. And so it's kind of interesting since we've been there. And the system was trying to overcome the curse. And I think it's so interesting how mankind is always working to overcome the curse. And it goes on and on and on. Think of our economy and how much of it is curse-related. You know. Yeah, look at the medical area. I about fell over when I found out that, let's see, what are these? I'm trying to think of which, I've got a mix of sonogram and
ultrasound,
that's what I'm trying to think. I knew it was son something. Anyway, and my daughter-in-law is going to have, well, let's see, this is Tuesday. We'll have one in the next couple of days. And ultrasound, can you imagine what that costs? One ultrasound, and all it is to check and make sure the baby is
going right, everything's going good. $3,000. How long does it take to do that?
That's crazy. That's as much as an MRI.
Yeah. I said, that can't be true.
I've had lots of ultrasound.
Well, this one is in a clinic, but this clinic seems to be... Of course, my daughter-in-law is well-equipped, so she probably doesn't have to pay for it at all because of her insurance, which is why our cost is so high. And I thought, for $3,000, you know, we could, you know, rent a house on the street and buy one of those machines and, you know, do two or three of them in a day, and you'd probably pay for them pretty fast. But that's a result of the fall. People just try hard to live longer on it, and you know, we're all stuck with that gene pool of some kind. I haven't figured mine out yet, quite. I say I haven't figured it out because my grandmother lived to be 97, I think. So I don't know if I have those kinds of genes or not, and 80 is kind of close on some of the other family members, so I haven't figured it out. But I'm not too concerned about living very long. It's just as long as I get there without too much pain, And I haven't heard from about anything about Eldon's surgery today. I mean, yesterday. But you know, I was praying for him yesterday because I know. We're all mortals here until our work is done. Or immortal here until our work is done. Mortals are immortal here until our work is done. Let's get the right rhythm on it. And but he has that heart issue. And I found out that with all of the tests they've done on him, he's probably in better shape than he was in the last surgery he went through. So... that's good. Eldon is a heart transplant guy. Yeah, you met him, didn't you?
I don't know if he did not.
They were up
3 weeks ago.
3 or 4 weeks ago from Eugene.
Oh, so that was 2 weeks ago.
Probably did. I just can't remember.
Yeah. They got there faster than Wanda got there, so she got aced out of her slot up in front. And it's always funny. Okay, next up in this matter. After the flood, we have a resumption. The system's wiped out. And it really seems to have come to a head in this matter of industry and commerce, as well as other things, at that point. I've often wondered where education was during that time. You know, what they did. What did they teach people to do? I just don't, you know, we don't know. We speculate. I don't think they were a bunch of dummies. I mean, I think Adam was a very, very bright guy, and if anything happened, people's IQs may have gone down from one generation to the next, but you were a bright people. And so, you know, they probably had some training in zoology and biology and that kind of thing. Passing on the knowledge that came from the Garden of Eden before the fall and that kind of thing. I mean, in that. They're just, you think of this. How did they organize their government? We don't know. But in chapter 11, we arrive at Babel. Babel. And the whole earth was of one tongue. Whoops, wrong word. Shafa.
Lip.
One lip. Yeah, one lip. I thought it was Lashon, which is a word for... And, yeah, one lip. So, no comment. And it's one speech. And so they're in Shinar, and what do? Yeah, some more business comes because they said, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone. And slime, bituminum,
petrochemicals for mortar. Well, a little sand mixed with a little oil would pretty well be pretty cohesive, and that's what they had for that. And so they said, let us go and build a city and a tower whose top may reach unto or in the heavens. It's articular plural. And let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And they didn't like what Jehovah told Noah in 9. They didn't want to scatter. And so they were determined not to. They didn't have a reason to. I think they all didn't, I mean, I don't think they had any pioneering spirit. And it was so, I mean, it's interesting when you read U.S. history and the westward movement back early, well, it was in the 1800s, really just before the Civil War, St. Louis, Missouri, on the Missouri River, was on the outer edge of civilization. It was one of the jumping off points to go out into the great beyond, you know, in that matter. And it's so interesting, you don't even think of that. Nobody could imagine what has happened in those years in between. Well, they didn't have that pioneering spirit. It's just, you know, what happened to it here in a lot of ways? You've got some, but not like it was. You know, I mean, in my lifetime, people would go and get a 640 acres in pure sagebrush and nothing on it, no water. They had to dig a well down through that. It was a big gamble. And so 640 acres was a section. Someone would get half a section. And they go up and try to make a living and build something. And they were just pure pioneering spirit. Some of them lived in really amazing conditions. You know, in the Columbia Basin, there were people living on dirt floors and what they were living on. Then what happened, they got the idea that you could build a basement. And you could live in the basement until you could afford to build a house on top of it. So there were a lot of cinder block basements that people lived in. And a lot of churches started on cinder block basements, because they couldn't afford those either. But this whole idea at the end of the flood, you have a city, you establish yourself, they don't want to be moved, they built the tower. It wasn't a tower to reach to heaven. Many times, I really believe it was a tower that involves a worship of the heavens. And so you have the signs of the zodiac on the sides of it, and it was part of their worship. You know, it's really interesting. If you, I don't think it's worth anybody's while necessarily, but if you dig around in things like Knights Templar, Masonic Order, those kinds of things, almost inevitably, somewhere in their literature, you're going to find a picture of a representation of the Tower of Babel. It's just really interesting to me that's what happens. And I have a book at home that's on masonry, and on the cover, it's got a medieval picture of the Tower of Babel, which is kind of funny looking, you know, in that matter. And then, where is it? It's over around Ur. There's a place they identify with it, but I don't believe it is. It's a stair step city. But the way they build stuff over there, you know, the tells, they had layers. City to go down, they build a layer. So you can go through and find all kinds of civilization. Very interesting thing is at Megiddo in Israel. And Megiddo sounds like Armageddon. Yeah, it's the city that's on the edge of the plain of Armageddon. And it's overlooks
probably where most of that's going to happen. It's amazing how big it is. And you see the strata. And you're way up on this hill, and it probably started out down where there was a stream. And it just kept getting built up, and they had to make, you know, go down to get their water, which was interesting. Okay, so much for that. So industry developed. We can go through, and I just stick stuff in here, and I'll just mention it on the way through. Abraham and his economic security. Abraham was a wealthy man. He was a wealthy man almost by modern-day standards because he had so many cattle and so many slaves and such a big household. And remember Abraham. It's always funny. He's known as a man of faith. He gets his name mentioned in the Hebrews 11 section twice on two events. And, you know, he enters the land by faith and he sacrifices Isaac by faith. And he, every time he gets in trouble, he comes back richer. You know, Abimelech. Yeah, I say that, nobody here knows why I did that. I knew a pastor that always pronounced Abimelech. And nobody corrected him. I don't think anybody had the nerve, but it was kind of the going joke in his church. It's, you know, he's a pastor, and maybe he should have gone to seminary after all. Somebody told me he didn't need to. But he called him Abimelech. But Abimelech, remember the story? You know, he goes and, you know, she's my sister. That was a half lie, in a sense. I mean, his wife before he was, I mean, the sister. And so what happens, Abimelech, what does he do when he finds out and has problems? He sends him off richer than he came in by a long shot. And that happened twice. You'd think he would have learned his
maybe
lesson.
Maybe he didn't get rich.
No.
He was learning the wrong lesson.
Right. But that was, you know, commerce. Isaac had economic prosperity. I just had a list. Shechem. These are stories that we could go through, but we are not doing that time-wise. Esau, Joseph. Well, look at Joseph in commerce. He was on two sides of commerce. Got into the slave market. Only he was a product. He wasn't. And so, you know, he's there. He is involved in the slave and household slavery and all of that. Then the next thing you know, essentially the third in the kingdom. I mean, he's the one that handles everything. Or is he second? Oh, he's getting mixed up. But here he is. He's making Pharaoh all his money. He did a tremendous job. Pharaoh would have owned all of the land of Egypt if he'd let Joseph tax or charge the priests. The priests of Egypt were the ones that still had their property in the end. And so commercial enterprise. I mean, his planning, building barns, and all of that. So this is, and that's just part of the world system in that matter. And so what happens while Israel is there? I'm trying to think. In that Google thing, was that where they were singing about building it? No, I know that was something else. Or was it? Was there a song in there where they talked about building the pyramids? We've been building the pyramids all this time, and it was all for Passover. It was really kind of, I mean, it was really funny, some of this stuff that was around the edges. But they built the cities. They never said anything about pyramids, by the way, about them building pyramids. But they built the cities of Pithom and Ramses. And those were major cities. They were built from scratch, so far as we know. Ramses sounds like the name of a pharaoh. And it was built in honor of him. They were fortification cities. Pithom was over more toward the border to the east. And so they were busy building a city. And that meant they made the bricks. That's that story that comes from it. And so here they were.
having trouble getting out of the land. They've been there so long, they wanted out, and Pharaoh wanted manpower. And so that's, I mean, how God hardened his heart, I'm sure. What he did, he saw industry leaving the country.
Outsourcing.
Yeah, but they didn't plan to go. You know, they didn't have a chance to make bricks for 40 years. So they lost all of their skills. Their skilled laborers died.
Too many labor disputes out there.
Yeah.
Poor working conditions.
There we go.
They need a union.
That's probably why they didn't do anything. They probably had a union. They spent all their time on strike.
Yeah. I've seen some really interesting cartoons about that. I've thought of over the years, I would have been smart to have collected them. And I had one the other day. I thought it would be fun to collect it. But it was a dumb pun, whatever it was. And I mean, it just got me wrong. So I had a good laugh anyway. You know, I thought, oh, no. You know how that is. Okay, so we know pretty much the story. The plagues come with the issues of the plagues. The plagues came and attacked the gods of Egypt indirectly. When you go through these, I didn't put anything in here about it, but you realize that many of those plagues actually attacked government and industry. I mean, you want to have a rebellion. I mean, if you want to see Gaddafi overthrown, let him have a run to Plague 2, Plague 3, and Plague 4. And everybody, you know, anytime you get one, are eating anything, you're not eating frog legs, you're eating everything. I mean, it's frog bodies, and what's inside and out. And that was one of their deities. Lice. All of these issues. And every one of them tends to mess with agriculture. In many ways, your livestock die. If you have a beast with boils, what are these boils? You know, are these something that has spread the disease? You know, boils tend to be bacilli. And so because they're bacteria, was that possible that it was passed back and forth? You know, I'm not sure their medicine was up to knowing for sure. Hail and lightning, have a wheat crop, and let it do that. Who was I talking to recently? Went by a corn crop, there was a corn, and one of these cells went through with hail, and the next day they went by, and it was, you know, about this tall. Next thing you know, it's just right down flat on the ground. I mean, it just blasted it, and that's what it'll do to a crop. I've known wheat crops in eastern Washington that got hit with hail, and it probably cost them at least a third of the crop because it killed and wrecked and everything else. Locusts. You know, I've always thought it'd be fun to be in a locust plague, but as long as it's not my place. Why do I think that? Because I've read so much about the desert locusts. It would be just so interesting to be sitting out there in a camp chair after a nice rain and starting to watch these guys come out. And they crawl out of the ground, they go into that hopper stage, and they're jumping around like little hoppers. And they go through each stage of development. When they start, I mean, in the hopper stage, they've got to grow. And they're devastating then, but then when they can fly, they can, I mean, they're worse than a lawnmower. I mean, they just wipe everything out. And I have a book at home where I has a picture of him in Africa. And these poor Africans, they have nothing, and the locusts are in there getting into their gardens, and they're out there with, looks like, robes or something, trying to wave them off, and you can hardly see them because of all the locusts. And they're just eating everything. So you can think of this is an attack on a lot of commerce. And then when the lights go out and there's darkness, the economy stopped for 3 days. You know, they couldn't find their way around. There's all kind of speculation about the darkness, whether it was a big, huge storm that came and blotted out the sun, or how God did it.
It was supernatural. I don't care what they tried to do to explain it. But what it did, it stopped everything. If you could not find your door to get back in your house or get to the store or whatever, you were stuck. And most of them didn't really know how long the darkness was going to be. So you'd just be scared to death. If you weren't scared of the dark, you'd be after a bit. Because it was just pitch black. You know, we're fortunate, even with the clouds here. It's not that dark because there's stars and they reflect them. And that. So think about it. And so in Deuteronomy, I do want to go to Deuteronomy for a couple of verses just so we can see. God maintains some kind of control ultimately over. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, and we're just going to hop to about three of these verses, Deuteronomy 5:15. Deuteronomy 5 is where the second giving of the law is mentioned, the so-called giving of the law is mentioned. And in the Ten Commandments start at 16. But it says in 15, "And remember that thou wast a slave in the land of Egypt, and that Jehovah your God caused you to come out," that's Yatsah, "from there, by a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day." But you see here, you see he's bringing them out with his power. They were a slave. He reminds them. You look back at the verse before that. They have manservants and maidservants, which are commercial. And then we have the giving of the law. And when you go and play with 119, you have in verse 106, you have commandments, statutes, judgments. You have statutes and commandments in 2. You have words, like in Psalm 119 in verse 6. You have commandments, statutes, and judgments in 31 of chapter 5. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, there are little packets there is all I see when I go by here. And then 17 of 6, you have commandments, testimonies, and
all of those are
statutes.
Those are all... I get down with form papers and some other stuff. I've been playing around with that. It's been on the back burner for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing so many other things, but I've got notes started and I was going through this.
In 7, you've got the same in 11. Anyway, that's beside the point in this. So, and remember, it's kind of interesting when we think of this, the world system. Slavery was an integral part of the world system for most of its history. And so slavery was a mark of wealth in early history. There were slave peoples. In the Middle Ages, you had serfs, which were essentially slaves. They didn't have very much. And it's so interesting that even today we have slave societies. Nobody wants to admit it, but you have, seems like there's a religious prejudice, so I'd better not say it. No. Islamic societies have slaves, a lot of them. Mali Republic in Africa. You go through those North Africa, the Sudan, a lot of them. And what they... I read an article a couple of years ago in Christianity Today where the Muslims would go and raid Christian communities, take their kids and make them slaves. And, I mean, these were kids, well, remember they marry pretty early there, so probably into the mid-teens. And so what they were doing, they were going and raising money here to buy back the kids for their Christian parents from these Muslim slave traders. And it was a major project. And it cost, well, not a lot of money, but a lot of money. You know, Okay. And so that was really an important part of it.
That was before we had machinery that would do some things more automated level. And we're getting better and better and better with that. That kind of thing. That I think some people are afraid of some of this automation in agriculture. I spent 2 or 3 years trying to figure out a machine that could pick asparagus or cut asparagus. And I figured, you know, when you had to, I mean, that was pure soup labor, literally. You had a asparagus knife, and that's where we, in school, in our community, they let us come to school an hour and a half late, because so many kids were cutting asparagus, and you'd have an asparagus knife, and you'd have a file in your back pocket, and you'd cut them, and I thought, you know, if you could get a tool that would do it, they found a tool that is just different age. They cut asparagus. That's nothing to do with this class. They cut asparagus in eastern Washington where we get up at the crack of dawn. They cut it during the night with spotlights. You know, headlamps. And they have Hispanic labor. And they work during the night.
It's cooler at night. Well, of course, this time of year is a little warm anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, when you get, I mean, the asparagus comes on up in that country in April, after the first frost, and May and into June, depends on how
it is. I've seen them up in the daytime cutting it.
Yeah. I used to cut it in the afternoon. I'd cut one in the morning at one place, and there were two of us that cut this other guy's field in the afternoon after school. So it's anything to make a buck. I don't even remember what we were paid, but it wasn't very much. But anyway. Okay, amusements. We have this guy named Jubal in Genesis 4 and 21. And he was involved not only in musical instruments and playing them, but he made them. He produced them. And we can see that when we read that in that verse. So the world system gets involved in this kind of entertainment. And so it's verse 21, it says, and his brother's name was Jubal. He, emphatic, was the father of all such as handled the harp. Now the word harp is one of these instances where we do have a little discussion about what this is. BDB translates as lyre, you know, as a three-stringed harp kind of thing. I think we know better now. I haven't looked this up in a more modern, because we got a lot more background stuff. Handle the harp and organ. And so there was a big Wurlitzer ready to go. the word organ, I never can figure out what they thought when they did this in the King James era. And I should probably go look that up in the Oxford English Dictionary someday. It might, yeah, but it's a pipe. It was a wind instrument. It may have even been a reed wind instrument. And so you have a plucked instrument and an instrument that was wind of some kind. And so he laid hold of that. And underneath this, it seems that he was one who also made these to make them work. Some people are very good at musical instruments. And there was some guy that came through here a few years ago, and he had all these homemade instruments that were hilarious. I mean, out of anything that came across his way, whenever he went to the dump, he'd find something to make an instrument out of. And it would be stringed or otherwise. I smile because, you know, the shofar, the horn that was blown, that was a ram's horn. And I almost got a bigger one, but I didn't want to have to make room for one. But, man, that would ruin your lip. It would just tear it all up. I mean, with a nice, smooth mouthpiece, Louis Armstrong had a problem with his lips. But they came up with these things, different things to make sounds. I mean, some of the things that were a joke, a Jew's harp. Anybody know what a Jew's harp is? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was very primitive. And they would have Jew's harp bands back in the 1930s in New York. They call it Jew's harp because it was cheap. Now, I mean, that was racist on their part, but that was what they did. And it's really interesting.
Or kazoos, too.
And kazoos, yeah. And kazoos, another real cheap instrument. You could do it. Not half as complicated as a harmonica on that. I used to think I'd have fun with it. Somewhere I have a couple of harmonicas, but I never got very good at figuring them out. I never had the time. So what happens? You have entertainment of different kinds that come from this. With this, you have a foundation for all kinds of activities, amusements, and that kind of thing. Some examples I've listed under five. Children's play in the world system. Look at how many games there are that relate, kids' games that are just world system. And some people are pretty good at thinking about that. If I find a game, wouldn't you have loved to have been the one who had developed Monopoly? You know, I mean, that toy company made a fortune and still is. There was a game in Eastern Washington that there were high hopes for. It was called the Farming Game. And a very clever game. I know some people would like to get my copy, or my game, and I don't play games, but it's got sentimental value. I don't think it went all the way down to, when it was up in the horse heaven, so it went almost down to the bend of the river, so along those hills. And it's a game board that's on a tractor seat. And it's like you're in the farming business and you can go bankrupt and you have to get seed and you gamble on the rain and the crops and the whole thing, you know. It's in that. And they probably broke even on that game. But games are part of it. Other things for children's play. Now, our kids are, you guys aren't wimpy. There are sure a lot of wimpy kids around here. On it. You know, how long has it been since I've seen a merry-go-round in human power to end a park? No. Some kid probably fell and chipped a tooth. So it was goodbye. Yeah. I'm surprised they have swings. Absolutely, totally surprised.
No more metal slides.
You know, what I heard one time, sometime last winter, there was a report on that. It was actually substantiated that in Glasgow in Scotland, during the wintertime, they kept the kids inside. They wouldn't let them go out to recess because they didn't have crash helmets, head protection, to go play outside in the yard in the snow. And that I couldn't believe it, but it was actually, they did. They had to have some, you know, the helmets, I guess, like bicycles they use.
Poor teachers.
You just imagine kids, I mean, when we were kids.
And wiped each other over the head with books.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine when we were kids if they'd ever tried to pull something like that. That would have gone over about as well as a lead balloon.
Well, they have a rule in Debbie's school that if it's, I think it's 20 degrees, they can't go out. And she just hates it because there's a lot of that kind of weather up there. And those kids just drive—they drive her crazy. One day she said, "Dad, they've been in the classroom all week long." She said, "I'm going totally crazy." And they have a gym, but you can't get everybody into that. So sports—we have Major League World System all the way around. Blazers are playing tonight. If they win, does it make a difference? It's the last game of the season tonight. Ooh. And so now they go. They won the slot in the playoffs, so. Anyway, I don't think I'll watch them or listen to them even then on that. Pat liked to watch them now and then. Gambling. It's kind of interesting, the effect. Like I have the John and Matthew passages where you have the gambling for Christ's garment. Music, vocal, instrumental. The best known instrumentalist in the Old Testament was David. And he was dealing with mental illness when it came to Saul. Dancing, lots of dancing. And remember, there's David, a David case. Remember, Michael didn't like it when he went out and danced before the Lord. He didn't have enough garments on. And she was really unhappy about it. But that's really common. And by the way, in Judaism today, there is a huge amount of dancing that goes on. Orthodox Judaism. They, of course, have their synagogues divided with the women's section and the men's section. But when they on a Sabbath, especially in some of the Orthodox groups, they believe that the dance is a mode of worship. And so the guys dance with the guys and the gals dance with the gals.
Like on Fiddler on the Roof?
Like on Fiddler on the Roof, only it gets more frenzied, and that's hard to imagine. Yeah. And that comes right out of Hasidic Judaism. And so the dance was a very interesting part of it in that matter. Verbal entertainments. Why would I say anything like that? When I did these notes, I was thinking about how many entertaining things there were. Chautauqua? See, that's dating me. I'm not well. I read about it. So, back before radio, back before TV, they had Chautauqua gatherings. And you would go and there would be lecturers or entertainers that would come in. I was pretty well acquainted with some of this. It was like it when my grandfather lived over in Idaho, and I did his journal. He got a journal for Christmas in 1899. So he entered the new year, so 1900, and he was single, and he would talk about going to some of these things in his journal. It was not a real... So what I did, I tried to read his writing, and I got it all up on computer. And so, what did I have? 100-some-odd pages, probably, of some interesting family history. And it was history of the Lewiston, Idaho area. So I sent a copy of it to my dad's cousin, and she made a copy of it and took it to the Historical Society. And between them, they got my name straightened out. Because they knew the names, and I tried to read his handwriting. And so I think they have a corrected copy of the Historical Society.
Is this what you're thinking about? Something like what they used to call vaudeville, too?
Well, vaudeville was off the edge of it. These are highly, they were pretty refined. They would debate. They would, sometimes if they didn't have somebody come in that was going to give you a lecture on, you know, the Incas or, you know, they were cultural kinds of things. And they would debate on a subject. And people in town would do it. And the Chautauqua, you could go for a week in the East and they would have these ongoing lectures. Well-known people. I mean, their names that... some of them in some of those places that you would know. You know, you might have 6 or 7 guys speaking over this week, and you'd have Emerson.
Ralph Waldo Emerson,
for example. I know he was involved in some of that.
Probably Thomas Edison, too, wouldn't he have been?
He was too busy trying to make light bulbs. but there were different, it was real interesting. It's an interesting whole... I mean, it's a part of the culture of the day that was really kind of special because, you know, you're out in the boonies, as it were, and these people would come in through this, and they'd be in small towns everywhere, and they'd be speaking every night, and they were well-known. I think Mark Twain even was involved in some of that, if I remember right. So it was, I mean, it was just the cultural thing. Everybody would come out. They didn't give them an exam. But they were so eager to know something, most of them really benefited.
And I know my grandfather did. He said more in his diary sometimes about those things than he did the day he got married. In his journal, what does he say? He has the date, the weather. He put the weather every day. The line in it was, "I married Effie today." That was it. I got such a kick out of that. I thought, yeah, my grandfather was pretty short spoken, and I was married Effie today.
It's pretty iconic.
Yeah. So, theater and drama, fine arts. I mean, these are all things that come out. We know it. Modern stuff. Well, since the time I did this, you know, audio and visual has become a huge thing. I mean, you can't keep up. I got a magazine within the last 3 or 4 days. I don't remember which one it was now. Probably Popular Mechanics or one of those. And I opened it up, and here's this whole line of electronics devices that I'd heard of, but now here, all of a sudden you have all kinds of models they're looking at, and they're all new, and you know, they're a pocket size, like a checkbook, and you have screens on both sides. So you have a screen on one side and the other. And they just about walk out the door for you. They're so fancy. And it's interesting, but that's all world system. And to me, it's so interesting. People want more and more and more and more and more on it. And I see that because my kid's in the industry with some of this stuff. And, you know, he got me a cell phone back some years ago, and he has it on his corporate account. So I don't pay for my cell phone. I don't abuse that, but I use it in an emergency. So anyway, one day he said, "Dad, you need a new cell phone." I said, "No, I don't use it at all. I'm going to give you a new cell phone." And so he gives me this cell phone. And it was, let's see, he got it the day before it was released. And he gives it to me. It's a Garmin. And so it'll tell me where I am. Tell me when a flight's leaving and coming. It saved my bacon when I went to Bartimaeus with all the late flights into San Francisco, and I'm supposed to herd these blind people, and they're coming in different flights from different parts of the country and different parts of the airport. I'm sitting there running my cell phone to see when the flight's supposed to arrive, and it updates it. And it saved my bacon. That's world system. And it, you know, I haven't used that cell phone. When was the last time I used it? Christmas time, maybe? Because I don't say I haven't. In fact, it's probably not even charged on it. I just don't use it. I'll pack it now and then when I might need it. But now Don can get out and weigh somebody down. I go to Woodburn, so I don't need it then. Otherwise, I could probably hit 911 or something on it if I ran in the ditch. Anyway, okay. And so what happens? The purposes, where are we going? Let's go ahead and just stop here, and we'll come back and fly. We'll talk about education and some of that. But what that means, we're starting a B on 91 down where it says the purposes of amusements and entertainment in the world system.
We were just getting going, but that wasn't ready to stop already.
Well, I looked at that thing over there, and it said, yeah, time to stop.
I looked, and yeah, it is. It just went by so quick.
Yeah. And, it's interesting when you think about entertainment and the world system's design. Entertainment is used to distract from the results of the fall. It really is. I mean, it's just so interesting to get your mind off of things. And you know, it's interesting even as we live today. I mean, we still, people will watch TV or something like that, or, I mean, they find solace in it. And I don't have time to find solace in it. I already work in the solace.
You don't need it.
Well, who knows? I might need
it. You should hear some of the people at work. They'll talk about the TV programs and the fantasy football, and it's just like, this is the most important thing in the world. And you listen to it, it's like, who cares, you know?
No.
It's so important to these people.
Yeah. Well, I've done amazingly well. I'm thankful that I've been able to do that. That I, you know, this is a stage-by-stage thing. When Valley went to an afternoon service, I had to give up a chunk of football, which I just, I mean, it didn't make any difference who was playing. I always made sure I spent. So I ended up with the last half of some games. So then I, when they decided to go digital, what did I do? I got the box, but I didn't hook it up. And I said, if I can make it through the Super Bowl, I'll be doing pretty good. I've made it through two Super Bowls so far. So I don't even have, I mean, I watch, you know, important things on TV. You won't believe what I watched on Friday night. I watched 2 hours of The Avengers. The Avengers is an old British spy kind of thing. And I've got most of them, I mean, most of the main years. And so I watched two of them. And they were a kick. They were just totally funny. And they always had these weird plots. And I watched two of those.
Well, they have that one, there's several stations that they have on the computer. One is VEOH or something that you can watch old stuff on there. And Mark Marcos was saying he was watching, Highway Patrol from back in the 50s?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Barbara Crawford was in there, I believe. This is way back. It's, you know, 60 years ago now. But he found that. He was watching that one night. He was telling all about it.
50, the only thing I knew was on TV was football, and it was just the Rose Bowl. I mean, we sometimes we get to watch more than a Rose Bowl. We get invited to somebody's house at church, and that was all there was in football. We didn't know anything else. Okay, thank you, Father, for the evening. Bless us. We step into the rest of it. May you use the time in our lives to rejoice in our God. Thank you for the privilege of being together. In Christ's name, amen.